Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We have documented Israel's perpetration of 3 out of the 5 prohibited acts under the Genocide Convention since the 7th of October. These include killing members of the group, causing them serious mental or bodily harm, and inflicting conditions of life calculated to bring about their physical destruction.
Amnesty International has become the first major human rights organization to conclude Israel's committing genocide in Gaza. We'll speak to Amnesty's Israel-Palestine researcher. Then, All That Remains, a new Al Jazeera documentary, tells the story of Leon, a 13-year-old girl from Gaza who lost her leg in an Israeli strike.
The doctor told us we had to choose between the girl or her leg.
What happened to Leon weighs very heavily on me.
To make her feel better, I tell her it isn't just you. It's this kid, that kid, that kid, and that's just who we know.
Leon is one of over 1,000 Palestinian children who lost their limbs in Gaza in the first 2 months of the Israeli assault. Then to France, where President Emmanuel Macron is refusing to resign after lawmakers across the political spectrum united to oust his prime minister. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Syria, the leader of the powerful armed opposition group Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, a former al-Qaeda affiliate, has declared opposition forces have taken complete control of the central city of Hama. In an interview with CNN published today, Abu Mohammed al-Jalani said his group's ultimate goal is to overthrow Syria's authoritarian president Bashar al-Assad. Armed groups now control Hama's military airport and were seen freeing prisoners from the city's jail. They've since pushed further south, claiming complete and rapid control of the northern suburbs of Homs, Syria's third largest city. Overnight, thousands of Homs residents fled toward Syria's western coast. On Thursday, Lebanon's Hezbollah movement pledged its support to the embattled Syrian government, which faces one of the largest challenges to Bashar al-Assad's authority in 13 years of bloody civil war. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of Syrians displaced by violence are struggling to survive amidst freezing temperatures. This is Shafika Saida, a Yazidi Syrian whose family fled to a camp in northern Syria.
We were staying in Al-Shahba. They said the Free Syrian Army would enter the area. We were afraid because there were women with us. We were afraid that they would kidnap them from us. Our baby grandson was born on the third day here. We were sleeping outside. There was no tent or anything. We didn't find anything to eat when we got hungry, and there were no ovens to cook. The baby was born here, and we named him Afrin, after our city.
The Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza has again come under intense attack by Israeli forces who stormed the beleaguered hospital, making arrests and ordering others to evacuate. Kamal Adwan's director, Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, also reports many deaths and injuries from Israeli strikes, including 4 medical workers who were killed. Dr. Abu Safia, who himself was severely wounded in Israeli attack last month, called the situation catastrophic. In southern Gaza, a director of a soup kitchen in Al-Mawasi in Khan Yunis says many families rely solely on one meal per day from his operation after the World Central Kitchen paused its Gaza distributions following an Israeli airstrike that killed 3 more of its workers last weekend.
Now the ghost of famine is beginning to appear here in the southern Gaza Strip. These families can't afford even the low-priced materials and have no source of food except from this charity. Families are relying on this soup kitchen as their only means, as they have found their haven in it. Currently, we are serving more than 800 families, equivalent to approximately 4,000 people.
French President Emmanuel Macron dismissed calls to step down Thursday as he addressed the nation following the collapse of the French government in a no-confidence vote.
The mandate you democratically gave me is a five-year mandate, and I will carry it out fully until the end. We cannot allow ourselves to be divided or to do nothing. That's why I will name a prime minister in the coming days. I will ask them to form a government in the general interest, representing all the political parties who can participate in it, or at least who agree not to bring it down.
The leader of the Socialist Party met with President Macron today and urged him to meet with the heads of leftist parties as the president selects a new prime minister. We'll go to France later in the broadcast. On Thursday, Donald Trump tapped Rodney S. Scott, his previous head of Border Patrol, for Commissioner of Customs and Border Protection, and Caleb Vitello as acting director of ICE, that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Trump's vowed to enact mass deportations as soon as he returns to office. In other transition news, President-elect Trump selected venture capitalist, former PayPal COO David Sacks, as his AI and crypto czar. The created position won't require Senate confirmation or financial disclosures, though it's likely to directly benefit Sacks' various business interests in Silicon Valley. Sacks is a close ally of Elon Musk and is expected to push for more deregulation. In related news, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, tapped by Trump to run a proposed Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, met with Republicans on Capitol Hill Thursday to push plans to dismantle the federal government. New federal filings confirm Musk spent over $250 million to help elect Trump. The far-right Heritage Foundation, which created Project 2025, said it's spending $1 million to lobby Republican senators to confirm Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense amidst backlash over his history of sexual assault, misusing funds in his previous positions, possible ties to white nationalists, and various violations committed while drunk in public. He once yelled, "Kill all Muslims," while out at a bar during a work trip. Meanwhile, House Republicans on Thursday voted to block the release of Matt Gaetz's ethics report following an investigation into allegations that Gaetz was involved in the sex trafficking of an underage girl. He withdrew from consideration as attorney general. Trump's transition team has prepared a list of countries to which it may deport asylum seekers when their home countries refuse to accept them. That's according to NBC News, which reports the arrangement could lead to hundreds of thousands of people becoming permanently displaced in countries where they have no connection to communities, language or culture. On Thursday, the governments of the Bahamas and Turks and Caicos said they oppose Trump's deportation plans. Panama and Grenada are reportedly also on Trump's list. Meanwhile, an investigation by The Guardian newspaper finds the Biden administration has for the past year been in the process of extending at least 14 contracts with private sector immigration jails across the United States and exploring options for expanding detention capacity. That's despite Biden's past statements opposing for-profit prisons over their long record of human rights abuses. In climate news, a Biden administration official has told the International Court of Justice in The Hague that historical greenhouse gas emissions should not be considered wrongful acts. State Department legal advisor Margaret Taylor made the argument during a landmark climate case brought by low-lying island nations who face an existential crisis caused by wealthier polluting nations.
International human rights law, however, does not obligate states to mitigate anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions. Nor does it currently provide for a human right to a healthy environment. Acts or emissions that preceded the crystallization of international obligations with respect to climate change cannot be internationally wrongful acts.
Representatives for China made similar arguments, saying UN climate change negotiations should be the only channel for global climate governance. That prompted sharp criticism from Vanuatu Special Envoy for Climate Change, who also called out the governments of Australia and Saudi Arabia for attempting to shrug off responsibility for historical emissions. In North Carolina, the town of Carrboro has filed a lawsuit against one of the country's largest electric utilities, accusing Duke Energy of contributing to global heating and lying to the public about the climate crisis. It's the first lawsuit of its kind in the United States. Plaintiffs say Duke Energy waged a deception campaign to hide the role of fossil fuels in exacerbating climate change, resulting in delayed action to curb the impacts of greenhouse gas pollution. The suit also alleges Duke continued to operate its coal and gas power plants despite learning about their harms nearly 60 years ago. Carrboro has faced intensifying extreme weather events, including catastrophic flooding. Duke Energy operates 6 power plants in North Carolina and is the third largest source of carbon dioxide in the United States. UN human rights experts are raising alarm over the criminal prosecution of 2 climate activists who were arrested in New York this summer during a series of nonviolent protests demanding an end to financing for the fossil fuel industry. Alex Conan and John Mark Rosendahl were taken into custody during protests against Citibank and criminally charged with assault and criminal contempt. The assault charge was later dropped, and both climate activists then pleaded guilty to the lesser charge of disorderly conduct. Rosendahl, who is a professional cellist, was arrested in August for performing a piece by Bach during a protest. In a victory for environmental activists, Norway's socialist lawmakers have temporarily halted Norway's plans to move forward with deep-sea mining in the Arctic Ocean by agreeing to support the government's 2025 budget in exchange for the pause. In January, Norway's parliament voted to allow deep-sea mining exploration in a swath of its Arctic waters about the size of the United Kingdom, which scientists warned would severely harm vulnerable ecosystems and even drive species to extinction. On Capitol Hill, police arrested over a dozen transgender advocates, including Chelsea Manning, as they staged a bathroom sit-in protest at a congressional restroom near the offices of House Speaker Mike Johnson and Congressmember Nancy Mace. They chanted, "Our bodies are no debate." The protest, led by the Gender Liberation Movement, came after Congressmembers Mace and Johnson imposed restrictions on transgender and non-binary people using congressional bathrooms ahead of trans Congressmember-elect Sarah McBride's swearing-in next month. And the health insurance company Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield has reversed a new policy imposing time limits on coverage for anesthesia during surgeries in Connecticut, New York, and Missouri. The policy, which was set to go into effect in February, was announced in November but went viral earlier this week in the wake of the killing of UnitedHealthcare's CEO. The news provoked major outrage from the public, elected officials, and the medical community. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In a landmark report released Thursday, Amnesty International has accused Israel of committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. It's the first time a major human rights organization's labeled Israel's actions in Gaza following the October 7th attacks of 2023 as genocide. This is a video released by Amnesty International to accompany its new report. "You feel like you are subhuman. Israel's genocide against Palestinians in Gaza" is the name of this video. It features Amnesty International Secretary General Agnes Callamard and their Israel-Palestine researcher, Boudour Hassan. It begins with a clip of former Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant.
"We are laying complete siege on Gaza. No electricity, no food, no water, no fuel. Everything is closed. We are fighting human animals, and we act accordingly.
For over a year, we've witnessed utter carnage unfolding right before our eyes in the occupied Gaza Strip with no end in sight. Many have described this carnage as the first live stream genocide, day after day. What has your government done to prevent this genocide? What have your political leaders done? What are they doing now?
You feel like you are subhuman. Israel's genocide against Palestinians in Gaza.
Israel has been waging an ongoing and devastating offensive on the occupied Gaza Strip. More than 43,000 Palestinians have been killed and tens of thousands injured. Nearly 2 million displaced, neighborhoods flattened, aid and life-saving supplies restricted, all sparking an unprecedented humanitarian catastrophe. The term genocide has increasingly been used to describe Israel's conduct in Gaza. But how can we assess whether what is happening is actually genocide? The first treaty to explicitly define and criminalize genocide in international law was adopted by the United Nations in 1948 in response to the atrocities of World War II. To prove genocide has taken place, you need to show that one or more acts prohibited by the Genocide Convention was carried out and that it was committed with the intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group, in this case, Palestinians.
As part of Amnesty International's research, we have documented Israel's perpetration of 3 out of the 5 prohibited acts under the Genocide Convention since the 7th of October. These include killing members of the group, causing them serious mental or bodily harm, and inflicting conditions of life calculated to bring about their physical destruction. For example, this would include the destruction of essential infrastructure, including homes, agricultural land, water and sanitation infrastructure, and infrastructure indispensable to the civilian population. They also include the mass repeated displacement under inhumane and unsanitary conditions, and they also include the deliberate obstruction of entry of life-saving supplies and aid.
It is clear the Israel authorities have deliberately inflicted these conditions and knew they would inevitably result in a deadly mix of hunger and disease. Which brings us to the other important component of the crime, the intent to destroy.
3, 2, 1.
It's an entire nation out there that is responsible. It's not true. This rhetoric about civilians not aware, not involved, it's absolutely not true.
These racist, dehumanizing, and genocidal statements call for the annihilation of Palestinians in Gaza and making Gaza unlivable. They provide evidence for Israel's intent to physically destroy Palestinians. As part of Amnesty International's research, we reviewed over 100 statements made by Israeli officials, and these statements clearly were echoed by Israeli soldiers on the ground.
Whoever returns here, if they return here after, will find scorched earth. No houses, no agriculture, nothing. They have no future.
Specific genocidal intent should be assessed through analyzing the most recent conflict, while taking into account a system of apartheid, a brutal occupation, and the 17-year unlawful blockade of Gaza, a history of systematic human rights violations built on the continuous dehumanization of Palestinians.
We have documented an unprecedented scale, speed, and seriousness of inhumane acts in Gaza. Palestinians are facing overwhelming trauma and pain. We have interviewed parents digging up the remains of their children with their own hands. And we have documented the mixture of hunger and disease that has ravaged Gaza, all while the healthcare sector has collapsed completely.
This must stop. And for genocide to end, governments around the world must come together and they must take action, resolute action. You must ask that they stop transferring weapons that are murdering children in their thousands and decimating entire Palestinian families. You must demand that justice be delivered, that all those responsible for the genocide be held to account. Perpetrators benefit from the inaction and the complicity of too many of our political leaders. No war criminals should ever be allowed to walk free, undisturbed, fearless. Let's put all our instruments into action. National tribunals, universal jurisdiction, international criminal court. Governments must do everything in their power to end Israel's genocide.
That's Amnesty International Secretary General Agnès Callamard, part of a video Amnesty released along with its 296-page report detailing Israel's genocidal actions in Gaza. Israel's rejected the charge of genocide, describing the report as, quote, fabricated and based on lies. This is Israeli Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs Sharon Haskel.
Amnesty International thinks that you're stupid because they think that in the 101 pages report that they actually produced, you will not read them. In this report, they actually altered and changed the legal terms and definition for what is a genocide because Israel doesn't meet those criteria. So Amnesty International had to alter it.
The U.S. State Department also said they, quote, disagree with Amnesty's report and continue to find allegations of genocide unfounded. For more on the report, we are joined by Amnesty International researcher on Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories, Budur Hassan. She's joining us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. Budur, we saw you in this video report. If you can respond to what the Israeli government and the U.S. said and tell us more about why Amnesty has taken this position, the first among international major human rights organizations, that Israel's committing genocide in Gaza.
Thank you for having me again, Amy. Actually, if anything, why the question that should be asked, why did it take Amnesty this long to produce this report, not why we have adopted this approach in the first place? And one answer to that is, if anything, we try to be absolutely true to the definition of genocide under the Genocide Convention, but also to full suit with the jurisprudence on genocide, including the main decisions taken by the International Court of Justice on what is genocide. And because we are talking about strict and narrow definitions, our report and those who can read the legal section, and apparently the Israeli spokesperson failed to read that, we'll see that we absolutely adopt the definitions and the jurisprudence taken by the International Court of Justice, especially on the interpretation of what is specific intent. And in fact, this is why also it took us so long to produce this report, because we wanted to produce something that can be used by those who want to charge Israel with genocide. We wanted to produce strong enough evidence, both for the commission of the prohibited acts under the Genocide Convention, in this case, killing Palestinians deliberately, inflicting them life-changing injuries, and inflicting upon them also destructive conditions of life that would cause their slow death. And we found that when we analyzed this conduct and we based our analysis both on evidence collected on the ground through our field workers who have been working tirelessly on the ground in Gaza since the 7th of October, and also on the analysis of satellite imagery, on the analysis of all publicly available evidence that we could reach, we found that these prohibited acts were indeed committed. And the next question was whether these acts were committed intentionally and with the specific intent to destroy Palestinians as a protected group or as such. And then we again followed the jurisprudence of the International Court of Justice, which is how you infer specific intent. You do infer it through two types of evidence. You do look at the pattern of conduct that the Israeli military has been adopting, which include the scale, severity, and seriousness of attacks, the repetition of the attacks, the cumulative effects of these attacks, the totality of evidence of that you can found on the ground. And secondly, you also looked at the direct evidence, which is the statements that we heard from Israeli officials. At Amnesty, we looked at more than 100 statements issued by Israeli officials, including 22 statements issued by high-ranking Israeli officials and military officers responsible for the war and security cabinets and responsible what is happening on the ground. We then looked at how these dehumanizing, derogatory, and racist statements that called specifically for the destruction and annihilation of Gaza, for equating Palestinians in Gaza, all of them, to Hamas, and for calling for the large-scale destruction of life in Gaza, we saw how these statements were echoed by Israeli soldiers. We verified 62 videos in which soldiers appeared to be echoing these statements while celebrating the destruction of Palestinian universities, mosques, and agricultural lands.
I wanted to go directly to the U.S. State Department, who they have said they disagree with the conclusions of Amnesty's report. This is an exchange between reporters Prem Thakur and Saeed Erekat in the State Department press briefing with State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel.
What I can say as a spokesperson of the U.S. government and as a spokesperson of this administration is that the findings of the accusations of genocide, we continue to believe those to be unfounded. To provide
so if you indulge me just a little
sure.
bit. I mean, look, we have seen almost 2 million people being forcibly moved from one place to another. This morning, Al-Mawasi was bombed, an area that Israel designated as safe haven for people to go to. They bombed it. They killed 20 people. What does it take? Does it have to the whole population of Gaza has to be annihilated for you to term it genocide? What are we waiting for on this issue?
Saeed, I'm just not going to get into this rhetorical hypothetical.
So we've seen the targeting of thousands of journalists, medical staff, humanitarian workers, infrastructure workers, the total decimation of agriculture, religious sites, homes, residential blocks, the destruction of neighborhoods, memories, bloodlines. Northern Gaza is ethnically cleansed to a great extent. Doctors, including from America, say that they've seen kids deliberately sniped. How many acts of genocide does it take to make a genocide?
So, look, I appreciate what you're trying to do with the way that you phrased that question, but let me just say again unequivocally that the allegations of genocide we find to be unfounded.
So that's State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel responding to journalists Prem Thakur of Zateo and Saeed Erekat of Al-Quds. If you can respond, Budur Hassan, as you sit there in the occupied West Bank, as you sit there in Ramallah, having just been a major part of producing this report of Amnesty International.
One question that was addressed was how long would it take for the United States to acknowledge the severity of what's happening in Gaza? The United States administration is not only denying that a genocide is happening in Gaza, it's denying that human rights violations are being committed by the Israeli authorities in Gaza. And we know, Amy, probably in 4 or 5 years' time, those very same people who are now denying that a genocide is happening, once they become retired officials, they will say, it happened under our watch and we did nothing to stop it. And they will probably give speeches in which they are awarded money in order to come and say, we knew that this was happening, we could not stop it. And unfortunately, this has been happening so often. And this is, if anything, it's a damning indictment of the United States' failure to stop Israel's violation. If there is any country that has the capacity, the power, and the tool to stop this genocide, it's the United States. Not only has the United States failed to do so, it has consistently awarded Israel. It has consistently continued to flout the United States' own laws in order to continue giving Israel the weapons, the very same weapons weapons that are used by Israel to commit the genocide in Gaza.
You know, this reminds me of 30 years ago, almost exactly, when Madeleine Albright was Secretary of State and Bill Clinton was president. And they were continually challenged about what was happening in Rwanda. And they refused to use that term genocide, because if they did, well, can you talk about what it would mean, what it would trigger if they used the word genocide? And by the way, in that case, they would later apologize and say they were wrong.
But what would these apologies, how would these victims read these apologies?
Right, forget
and
the
I think
apology.
It's not only the
talk,
guilt
talk
of
about,
the...
Forget the apology. Talk about what it would mean if they use the word genocide. What does that trigger internationally in terms of the world bodies at the UN and the response?
Obviously, considering that genocide is a crime under the ICC statute, and considering that we're talking about something that is absolutely prohibited.